Attention, attention, this is History Lost in Time.
And welcome to episode 62 of the History Lost in Time podcast. This podcast is available in German and English on YouTube, Spotify and Podcast.de, with a social media presence on Blue Sky and Instagram. Note for Spotify users, you can find the latest episodes on Spotify. For all episodes since the beginning, please visit podcast.de and YouTube.
The topic of this episode.
In this episode, I want to use the numerous statistics and surveys from my sources to take a look at the listeners, viewers and media consumption in West Germany from 1924 to 1979 and in the context of unified Germany up to 1945. I will initially proceed chronologically and then attempt to condense the topics somewhat around the middle of the episode.
Political agenda and background.
None.
The sources that were used.
For these episodes, I primarily rely on the books by Hans Bausch, Rundfunk in Deutschland, Broadcasting in Germany, volumes 3, 4 and 5, published by Deutscher Taschenbuchverlag, Munich, 1980. Volumes 3 and 4 deal with broadcasting policy after 1945, while Volume 5 by Hans-Jörg Bessler focuses on audience research. Listener and audience research began with the analysis of letters from listeners and later with surveys. I have already mentioned a few of these in previous radio episodes, but for the sake of completeness, I'll proceed chronologically here. During a football broadcast on Weimar Radio in 1927, listeners were invited to write letters to the station and express their opinions. A total of 13,500 letters arrived, enough for a reasonably representative analysis, at least among radio-listening football fans. As early as 1924, one of the Weimar radio stations distributed a survey asking listeners what kind of programming they would like to hear. It received a respectable 8,000 responses. The top five program types requested were operetta, a remarkable 83%, daily news, time announcements, chamber music, and mixed concerts. The least popular were sermons, a mere 9%, plays, fairy tales, fashion programs, and political lectures. The apolitical radio of the Weimar Republic thus clearly resonated with listeners, at least in 1924. However, there were early calls for a 19-hour program starting at 6 a.m. and ending around 1 a.m. This wasn't achieved until the early 1930s. Prime time at that time was from 8 to 10 p.m. Radio listening remained fairly stable from the mid-1920s to the mid-1950s. Television then changed the structure, and it has remained more or less the same to this day. In the period up to the 1950s, peak listenership occurred in the morning from 7 to 8 a.m., at midday from 12 to 1 p.m., and in the evening from 8 to 10 p.m. Low listenership was observed in the morning from 9 to 10 a.m. and in the afternoon from 3 to 4 p.m. The most valuable broadcast times were therefore the early morning, midday and evening, while the mid-morning and afternoon were more suited to niche audiences. An analysis in Volume 5 on page 28 shows how this had changed by 1976. Radio still had a peak from 7 to 8 a.m., but then there was a steady decline until the evening, with a slight midday peak from 12 to 1 p.m. Television started around 4 p.m. and reached its peak between 8 and 10 p.m. Television had thus taken over the prime time. If you simply add the 1976 figures for television and radio, the same curve emerges as in 1931. However, media consumption was now divided between radio and television. The most valuable broadcast time on radio was now the morning, followed slightly by midday. The evening, however, was now the most valuable time for television and the least valuable for radio. Radio programming interests shifted only gradually. In the 1930s, Germans still mostly enjoyed listening to music on the radio. While classical music was more popular with the upper and middle classes, popular entertainment and dance music were enjoyed by all social classes. The German attitude towards political and current affairs had changed, however. Across all social strata, speeches and lectures on domestic issues, news reports and weather forecasts were popular. During the Second World War, reports from the high command of the Wehrmacht and military lectures were particularly in demand. Especially from 1942 onward, as the military situation worsened, people wanted to hear more about specialized military topics. In contrast, news broadcasts were criticized for being too verbose and for being too concise. SD reports reveal that radio broadcasts and news reports were subject to critical scrutiny. Volume 5, page 37, quotes one such SD report. Major Bly's lecture, Air Terror, was eagerly anticipated, but it did not deliver on all promises. The speaker did not adequately answer the questions he himself posed regarding when the terrorist attacks would cease and what we would do about them. The reports from Italy were often received with skepticism, as accounts from soldiers on leave or letters from the front painted a less than favorable picture of the situation of our Axis partner. Among the entertainment programs, variety shows and light-hearted afternoon programs were particularly popular. The SD was also aware that Germans listened to foreign broadcasts, and why? Quote from Volume 5, page 38. Many observations suggest that relatives of missing Stalingrad soldiers attempted to listen to Soviet radio stations to learn more about the soldiers' fate. Some of these comrades openly stated that one should listen to Moscow until the German government provided information about the whereabouts of the missing. It is also occasionally noted that radio listeners, as the war dragged on, found the German news service too monotonous and one-sided, and apparently sought additional news from abroad to form a clearer picture of the situation themselves. After World War II, the Americans brought their public opinion research methods to Germany. Surveys gained in importance, even though their results were initially viewed with skepticism by the Germans. However, the survey results paint a rudimentary picture of what radio and television consumption looked like in the post-war period. A preliminary survey conducted in January 1946 in the US zone revealed the following. 42% of households owned a working radio. 56% of Germans listened to the radio, either at home or elsewhere, primarily during prime time from 6 p.m. to 10 p.m., either regularly or at least occasionally. The most popular stations were those in Munich, Stuttgart, and Frankfurt. Most radio listeners were men under 29 years of age with higher education, former members of the Nazi Party and members of the middle class. Germans generally trusted radio more than the print media. A second US survey from October 1946, conducted in the US zone, the British zone, and West Berlin, yielded similar results. However, radio listening in West Berlin, at 67%, was slightly higher than in the rest of West Germany. People preferred listening to their local stations. For example, in Württemberg, Baden, and yes, that was its actual name back then, Radio Stuttgart had a 93% approval rating. Music, news, and political commentary were the most popular types of programming. Furthermore, radio was considered more trustworthy than the print media. Surveys revealed that by 1948, radio was already perceived as significantly more credible than during the war. In West Berlin, RIAS had already proven more popular than the communist Berlin radio even before the Berlin blockade. From 1946 onward, Germans themselves also conducted surveys. The results were similar. According to these surveys, Germans most enjoyed listening to weather reports, news, cabaret, and dance music. Women listened to the radio for an average of 6 hours a day, men for about four. So-called serious music, such as operas, was preferred in the evenings and not listened to at all in the mornings or at midday. Popular entertainment music, on the other hand, was always well received. What had already become apparent during the 1930s and 40s intensified in the 50s. Radio increasingly became a background medium. Listening was no longer the primary activity. Instead, the radio was on in the background. This naturally meant that longer talk formats faced increasing difficulties, and had to be replaced by shorter formats. A 1951 survey revealed that depending on the program, only 23-38% of listeners focused exclusively on the radio. The rest were occupied passively, for example with handicrafts, or actively, for example with conversations. The acceptance of technological innovations was also surveyed. A 1954 NWDR survey revealed that most Germans continued to listen to the station's first channels on medium wave. However, FM reception of the station's second channels increased rapidly. FM-capable devices or FM modules for older radios, such as the Nazi-era Volksempfänger, became increasingly available. The main listening time was on winter weekends. On weekdays, listening time was independent of the season, but on summer weekends, Germans listened to the radio for only about 3.75 hours per day, compared to 4.5 hours in winter. In 1949, SDR conducted a survey on the most popular stars on the radio. The list includes names still known today, such as Heinz Erhardt, Marika Röck, Sarah Leander, Lala Andersen, Johannes Heesters, Hans Albers and Theo Lingen. The introduction of the Copenhagen Frequency Plan in 1950 brought about sweeping changes to broadcasting in Germany. Both in East and West, German stations were now reduced to a few poor quality frequencies. The reception quality of several stations deteriorated, and consequently the audience shifted. NWDR remained the most listened to station with over 50% of all West German listeners, experiencing only a brief dip in its ratings. SDR, on the other hand, plummeted from 31% to just 16%. BR fell from 30% to 18%, and HR declined slightly from 18% to 14%. The winners were SWF, which rose from 13 to 18, and RIAS Berlin, which increased from 5 to 13. The frequency change had no impact on Radio Bremen. These figures were confirmed in a 1955 survey. In West Berlin at that time, RIAS led with 66% of listeners ahead of SFB with 27%. During the 1950s, as already mentioned, television increasingly influenced the radio listening habits of Germans. Before the television era, around half of all radio owners listened to the radio in the evenings. At least 30% listened to the morning program and about 25% to the midday program. After the introduction of television, morning and midday program listeners remained relatively stable, but less than 10% now listened to the radio in the evenings. From the late 1950s onward, artists, journalists, and media professionals increasingly switched to television. Surveys became more and more television-centric, relegating radio to a secondary role. Radio lost its appeal but remained widespread. However, radio stations faced a crisis, particularly in the 1960s. They had to adapt themselves and their programming to the new realities in order to regain their appeal and increase their declining listening time. On page 121 of volume 5, it states,
"Radio's adaptation to the changing leisure habits of the population only began in the 1960s. For example, through a greater focus on early morning listening needs by giving the various radio programs a stronger musical focus, as well as through the introduction of so-called service channels with continuous light music and current news and traffic reports."
A particularly intense popularity battle raged in West Berlin between the American RIAS and the German SFB. RIAS was more popular until the early 1970s, although SFB was gaining ground. This only reversed in the 1970s. An ARD study from 1960-61 provides an interesting insight into West German media consumption. 95% of all households owned a radio. Of these, 85% were capable of receiving FM radio. Approximately one-third of all households had a television. Between 58 and 70% of all households listened to the radio every day. Usage time was higher in winter than in summer. On average, however, people listened to medium wave radio for 60 to 90 minutes and FM radio for 30 to 60 minutes. A few words about radio advertising. It was quite popular in the 1950s, as it offered a certain entertainment value. This changed in the late 60s. The prevailing emotion was now skepticism. Radio broadcasting emerged from its crisis in the 1970s by adapting to the new television era and changing listener habits. New channels were added, primarily service and music stations, generally the third channels, such as SWF3, SDR3, Bayern3, etc. These stations focused on light music, news and traffic reports, with few features or spoken word segments. Consequently, listenership figures shifted during the 1970s, a phenomenon clearly illustrated by the Bavarian Broadcasting Corporation in Volume 5, page 172. In 1972, 76% of Bavarian listeners tuned into Bavarian broadcasting on weekdays. Of these, 47% listened to Bayern 1, 12% to Bayern 2, and 27% to the new service station Bayern 3. The average total listening time was 112 minutes per day. Just 3 years later, in 1975, the figures looked like this. Listenership was at 77%, a 1% increase per day, practically the same. However, total listening time had risen from 112 to 125 minutes, an increase of more than 10%. Most interesting, though, was the distribution. Bayern 1 fell significantly to 36%, Bayern 2 dropped to 7%, and Bayern 3 rose to 44%. The flagship station, Bayern 1, had thus fallen behind its service-oriented competitor channel. The new broadcasting structure from the 1970s onward was as follows. Radio listening was now primarily in the mornings and in cars. Evening programming was a niche offering. The flagship stations were the service-oriented regional channels, the third channels. The first channels became calmer, more talk-based, and optimized more for the older generation. The second channels became cultural and educational stations. In addition, further minority broadcasters, for example youth or folk music stations, as well as information stations, such as NDR Info, WDR Info, or BR24, were created in the following decades. As early as 1972, WDR and NDR exhibited this structure, which can still be found in some form today. At WDR, however, the fourth channel was then the service channel. The first channel remained the flagship, while the second and third channels focused on more sophisticated, modern, or demanding content. This adaptation to the new realities allowed radio listening time per day in West Germany to increase from an average of 1 hour and 29 minutes in 1964 to 1 hour and 53 minutes in 1974. By 1980, this had even risen to 2 to 3 hours per day. From the 1970s onward, the prevalence of stereo technology and car radios also increased. According to statistics, by the mid-1970s, 32% of all radios were stereo-capable and 44% of all drivers owned a car radio. Social class was irrelevant in this regard. Radio reception was uniform across the country. From the 1970s onward, radio stations also offered nighttime programming. Since the early 1930s, there had been a full program from approximately 5 or 6 a.m. until about 1 a.m. Now the nighttime hours, which were normally free of radio broadcasts, were also filled with programming, eliminating periods of silence. Statistics revealed who used the nighttime programming. Three groups emerged. 1. Listeners who used the radio as a sleep aid or who couldn't sleep and were looking for distraction. 2. Listeners who used the radio for entertainment while with friends or traveling. 3. Listeners who worked at night or were traveling alone. These findings helped to tailor the nighttime programming to the needs of these niche listeners. Now a few words about Deutschlandfunk, which began broadcasting in the early 1960s. While Deutsche Welle's mandate, international broadcasting, clearly fell under the purview of foreign policy, this was somewhat less clear for Deutschlandfunk. It was seen as the counterpart to the East German Deutschlandsender and was tasked with producing radio programs for all of Germany and neighboring countries. Until reunification in 1990, Deutschlandfunk's mission was thus quite clear. I will discuss what happened afterwards at a later time. DLF achieved a remarkable 3% nationwide audience, which doesn't sound like much in relative terms, but in absolute numbers represents several hundred thousand listeners. Although television is not my focus in these radio episodes, I would still like to provide some data on television viewing at the end. As early as 1950, a majority of West Germans favored the rapid introduction of television. As mentioned earlier, test broadcasts had already taken place during the Weimar Republic, and regular television programming had been available in the Greater Berlin area since the mid-1930s. The desire and expectation was therefore present. However, the high percentage of those opposed to television is also surprising. Between 25 and 33% of the population rejected television in surveys conducted between 1952 and 55, stating they had no interest in watching it at home. Nevertheless, television prevailed. Once a television set was purchased, which was quite an expensive acquisition, people watched a great deal of television at the expense of other leisure activities. Trips to the cinema, theater, or going out in general were reduced. Instead, friends and family who didn't yet own a television were invited over to watch programs together. Quote from Volume 5, page 112. Those who bought a television set for the first time initially watched a great deal of television. However, average usage usually declined soon afterward and settled at a level that remained relatively constant for a long time. As early as 1955, the trend was emerging that the longer viewers owned a set, the less they used the available programming, even though it was constantly expanding. The view that the quality of television programming had declined and that it had been better in the past became widespread as early as the 1960s and 70s. This perception has probably not changed, even today. As my penultimate point, I'd like to address news broadcasts. Before the advent of television in the early 1950s, the top news program was the radio broadcast in the evening, usually sometime between 7 and 8 p.m. These programs regularly achieved ratings of around 40%. The midday news came in second, still managing almost 30%. Third place went to the morning news at 7 a.m., which garnered around 20%. The 8 a.m. news with 10 to 15% and the late night news at 10 p.m. with just under 10% occupied niche positions. Television ensured that the morning news became the top news program on the radio. Its share remained constant at around 20% even in the 1970s. The midday news, however, fell from almost 30% to about 15%. The 8 a.m. news held steady at around 10 to 15%, another indication that the morning programming was hardly affected by the introduction of television, while the late night news stabilized at around 2 to 3%. The primetime evening news, namely the Tagesschau on ARD and Heute on ZDF, had completely displaced the evening news on the radio. Radio ratings for evening news in 1971 were only 4%, slightly higher than those of the late night news. I'd like to conclude this episode with an interesting statistic about the technical equipment in West German households at the end of the 1970s. Precisely when my sources, which were published in 1980, end. According to this data, 96% of households owned a television. One could therefore speak of widespread television ownership. By this time, 20% even had a second set in the household, something that had been virtually unheard of until the early 1970s. Presumably, many of these were discarded black and white TVs. The number of color TVs, color television had been introduced in the late 1960s, rose from 7% to 56% in households between 1971 and 79. However, this also means that in 1979, 44% of West Germans still used a black and white TV as their primary set at home. And what about radios? In 1979, 97% of all households owned a radio. Radios were thus only 1% ahead of televisions. The percentage of households with two radios rose from 32% in 1971 to 61% in 1979, meaning that households with multiple radios were now the norm. The stereo usage rate increased from 25% to 45% during the same period. Mono was slowly becoming obsolete. The comparative figures with other devices are also interesting, providing a more comprehensive picture of the equipment in West German households at that time. In 1979, the figures were as follows. 83% of households with a car had a car radio, meaning it was now standard equipment in cars. 65% of households owned a record player, and 56% owned a cassette recorder. What was known as a stereo system, radio plus cassette deck plus record player, was therefore present in the majority of households. Headphones were owned by 20% of all households. 69% of all households had a telephone. An astonishing 31% had no phone connection in 1979. A camera was more common than a phone. 76% of households owned one. A respectable 16% even had a film camera. 22% of households owned a slide projector. Do young people even know what that is anymore? And a film projector was owned by 14% of households.
A few finishing words.
I hope this episode has provided an interesting glimpse into media consumption in the past. I am aware that this episode was somewhat more of a numbers and statistics exercise and didn't delve too deeply into the actual radio programming. However, this was also the last episode of this kind for a while. In the next radio episode, I'll start by looking at individual radio stations. The focus will be primarily on the inner workings of the stations and their programming. I'll begin with the smallest station, Radio Bremen.
Thank you. This was History Lost in Time.